This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-BONE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-BONE.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Mike Murphy joins us now, Chief of Staff for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Talk about the national debt and deficit. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's talk about the difference between debt and deficit, if we can.
Sure. So deficit is the annual difference between spending and revenues that the government takes in. And the debt is essentially an accumulation of all those past deficits. Our deficit for the last fiscal year, the federal government's fiscal year runs from September to September each year. And the last fiscal year, the deficit was approaching almost $2 trillion, a little less than that. And we have a debt that is approaching, as a percentage of our economy, our debt is approaching the near highest levels we've ever had. We have the highest debt levels as a percentage of our economy right around World War II, and we are fast approaching that, and we'll surpass that within about 3 years. So that's the essential difference between deficits and debt. And no matter how you look at it, Tommy, we're at a pretty perilous situation right now.
You know, you and I have these discussions occasionally, and you know, I was looking at the usdebtclock.org that you can go to if you like and watch the numbers rapidly accumulate. It's at 38 trillion now, I guess, 514 billion. These numbers are just beyond my comprehension. But if I were to have taken a snapshot of that, you know, I take a screenshot of my weight every now and then just to have a reminder of it. If I were to have taken a shot of this debt clock last year at this time, do you know where it would have been?
I mean, it probably would have been about $2 trillion less.
About 36.
That's the clip. Yeah, that's the clip at which we're rising at incredibly fast.
So let's talk about percentage of that to the gross domestic product and why that's so important and why people need to really start paying attention to this and what could happen if they don't.
Yeah, so economists, when they tend to look at our overall debt levels, they do look at a metric called our public debt as a percentage of our economy, of our total GDP. There's several reasons why they do that, but in basic terms, one of the primary reasons is it gives you a sense of a measure of your debt relative to some kind of measure of how much you can service it, right? So your economy is your underlying ability to service that debt. It's kind of similar to how when people evaluate whether someone's going to take out a mortgage, they look at your outstanding debt as a percentage of your income. And you can also measure it over time as a ratio. And so that's why people look at our debt as a percentage of our economy. And as I said before, you can measure it over time. It's the highest it's ever been, absent World War II. The big difference is, however, in World War II, we knew what we were borrowing for. We were borrowing to defend the free world, and it was expected to, and it did come down in the years and decades after World War II. Right now, we're not borrowing to defend the free world. We're borrowing for our own consumption. 87% of our built-in spending growth at the federal level, Tommy, is due to three things. It's due to healthcare spending, and it's due to Social Security, and it's due to interest costs on the national debt. The more debt we have, the interest is the fastest growing portion of our budget. We spend more annually on interest payments now than we do on defense. So that's the situation we're in. It's obviously unsustainable for many reasons. And we need policymakers to quickly turn attention to this in the new year.
You know, this is not going to happen. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I wish it were would happen, but I don't think it's going to. We can discuss when we return. Mike Murphy, our guest, chief of staff for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. We hear so much about, you know, they're spending. No, it's not us, it's them. And they either way, they keep running up the deficit is what they keep doing, or the debt is what they keep doing. And the interest alone is running up the debt. We'll pick it up when we come back. Any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. At some point, I think there's going to be a tipping point. And when we reach it, if we've not yet already reached it, I don't think it's going to be pretty at all. Traffic now, WWL. 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Mike Murphy, Chief of Staff for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Mike, somebody texted in and said, the truth of the matter is, and I guess they're going full Scrooge on this, we should only be spending on defense and other essentials for the government. I know that's harsh, but it is reality. What would that look like if this person were to get their wish and the government were to only spend money on defense and the other, however they're deeming essentials? And again, that's where you get into the politics of my essential is not necessarily yours. But what would that look like to the economy, and how important is government spending to the economy?
Well, you're hitting on the exactly right question, Tommy. It's what one deems essential in the framing of that question. I think that let's put it this way. You know, if you, I think, defense spending right now is somewhere, I would say, about 15-16% of the overall federal budget. Might actually be a little bit higher than that. So if you want just defense, you could do the math on the size cut that would require at the federal level. And then it's all a question of what other ones deem essential. I think that I steal a phrase that someone else said one time, that essentially what the federal government is these days, when you look at it, is it's a military with an insurance company, because essentially what the rest of government is largely healthcare spending, as I said earlier, and also funding people in retirement. That's social insurance, it's Social Security. You know, those programs, you take defense plus those plus interest, you're already upwards at about, you know, you're at essentially like 85%+ of the budget. The rest of what everyone tends to think of as some things with government at the federal level is federal education spending, transportation, research and development, other homeland security, et cetera. It makes up a small portion of the budget. The bottom line is, you know, you get what you are willing to pay for, right? And right now, the citizens are demanding, frankly, and wanting more services than they're willing to pay for, because we're not bringing in enough to fund that level of government. And obviously, we don't have politicians at the federal level that are willing to have hard conversations about what spending programs we need to rein in to get us on a better track.
And I don't know how they ever will, because the House comes up every 2 years for reelection. It's all about the R or the D, who's going to win, red or blue, right? So while they might complain about the debt, I don't see any resolution coming up anytime soon. Do you really? Do you see the leadership that where somebody's going to say, guys, look, this is going to hurt. This sucks.
I have to be an optimist, Tommy.
Huh? Tommy.
I have to be an optimist, Tommy. This year, the election, those elected to the Senate will be in office when Social Security goes insolvent. They can no longer avoid this.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that can flip some of the election incentives. When you're facing it in your next term, you can't avoid it. And voters need to demand, what are you going to do to deal with these things?
I hope you're right, Mike. I really do. I hope you have a great holiday season, you and your family.
You too, Tommy. Thank you, sir.
All right, Mike Murphy, Chief of Staff for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. You can text me at 504-260-1870. Do you see any leadership in Washington? Do you think anybody really is going to say, y'all is going to suck, but we got to get this debt under control, so we're going to cut this, cut. You see that coming? I don't. Time now, WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. Well, Dave, the texts are just pouring in.
Flowing in.
You know, we have our little survey going here every day I don't want to overhype it or anything like that, but it's the morning survey where we take into the texts to see what's on the pulse and what's on the minds of the audience. And since, as boy, by the way, if y'all missed the critically acclaimed and highly rated early edition of WWL First News with Dave Cohen, you missed it because he was talking about. Did you hear it or not?
I did hear it, yes, every word of it.
He was talking about Festivus and grievances and so forth, so we figured, well, since it's grievances and Festivus, why don't we make it our taking into the text survey and ask you what is it, not one thing at all, but what are some of the things that really irritate you?
What are your grievances?
So grievances, exactly. Somebody texts in and says, is this Michael Jackson?
It is, Jackson 5, actually.
Yeah, Jackson 5. See, again, and I mention this every year, if you know anything about Joe Jackson.
No, let's not go there.
I'm just saying.
Well, if you're going to air grievances, maybe you should go there.
If he had seen Mommy kissing Santa Claus, it wouldn't have been funny at all. It would have probably been a bloodbath, but we don't need to go there.
Well,
all right, so
he was Joe. But anyway, yeah. Keep going.
All right. People not turning right on red after stop.
Wait. What's wrong with that? Oh, not turning.
Not turning, yeah.
Just sitting
when you
there.
Call customer support and it's all automated, how many times have you screamed representative at the phone and gotten nowhere?
Operator!
Right?
Representative!
You press it more, over and over and over and over again.
Human!
Raised trucks with blinding LED lights.
But
let me tell you something, and with all due respect to the men and women that serve in law enforcement, boy, sometimes these lights that they have on, you can't see who's out on the road or not. So it's like the light on back of the vehicle or whatever it is that's blinding you as you approach, and you can't see who's there.
I'm with this person. The SUVs and the pickup trucks that have these super bright LEDs that are not their bright lights, that they're not brights, are still so bright that it is often literally painful to the eyes when they're behind you.
And then somebody else texted in and said, spitting for no reason.
Just spitting.
Yeah. How many times have you seen that on TV where you see the coaches, I don't know if they're enjoying a substance or not, but they're just like spitting for the sake of spitting.
That's something that's always kind of been funny to me. In the Superdome, which is not outside, and there's turf, not grass, people just spitting on this, essentially the rug. It's like spitting in someone's living room to me. Just spitting on the...
Well, there you go. It's one of Dave's grievances. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about the budget here on WWL. 6:46, 14 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by our friend Alex Narasta, Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Good morning, Alex. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, good morning. Merry Christmas. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. Tell me about what happened with DOGE, because it seems like just yesterday DOGE was going to cut all government waste and eliminate government spending. First, it was going to be $2 trillion in waste, fraud, and abuse. Then they reduced it to $1 trillion. Then it was $150 billion, which is still a lot of money. But tell me, what is the end result of DOGE? What did we see as a result of all of that?
So when we take a look at budgets and spending, which, as you said, was DOGE's primary target, what happened over the course of the last year, is that spending actually went up by about $248 billion. So rather than cut anything, DOGE presided over a government that kept on expanding, just like it has expanded in previous years. just like it expanded over the last several decades, and it was substantially higher by about $248 billion over 2024.
So Doge,
I think it's fair to say it didn't succeed on that front.
So they fired people, but they just shifted it and spent the money somewhere else. Is that accurate?
That's one way to look at it. The thing is, they ended up firing about 271,000 people, 9% of the federal workforce, which is a large number. It's a huge percentage. It's the fastest pace of firing workers in the federal government since the end of the Korean War when we demobilized. But the thing is, almost everything the government spends is not on wages and salaries. Most of what the government spends is transfers, taking, you know, Social Security taxes, giving it to retirees, it's transferring Medicare, and that just doesn't take a lot of employees. So when you take a look at it, bottom line, what you're talking about is federal employees, their wages and compensation, it's about 10% or less of all federal spending. So you could fire the entire federal government, and it would only lower federal spending by about $600 to $700 billion.
Not to parse dollars, but does that include military spending or not? Are you firing the military with that as well?
No, these firings don't include the military.
No, but I'm just saying in the example that you gave just now, the 10%.
Yes.
So it would include the military.
Yeah, it would include their salaries and pay. Of course, most of what the military spends its money on is not salaries and payment either, although it is larger for the military than it is for other agencies.
So were we sold a bill of goods with Doge? Was it all style and no substance?
Well, I think they tried. You know, I think they tried. I just think it was a much bigger and harder job than people like Elon Musk realized going in. The government was, you know, this spending is on autopilot. Congress has to change the laws to adjust the size of government. Congress really didn't change any laws to reduce the size of government in 2025. So there's only so much the president can do. There's only so much Doge can do. But they definitely overpromised and underdelivered.
This is going to be, if anybody does anything about this, this is going to be the House of Representatives, correct?
Well, they were in effect. Yeah, I mean, most budget bills begin there because they also affect taxes. And tax bills have to begin in the House. So that's where it would start, and then the Senate would have to approve it. Of course, you know, the biggest aspects of federal spending are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, interest in the national debt, and then the Department of Defense. So you're going to have to cut a lot of very popular programs if you want to make a dent at all in federal spending and reduce the deficit.
And the reason I bring that up is because of the structure of government. House of Representatives up for re-election every 2 years, so they just get finished with one election, and immediately they start campaigning again, right? So I just wonder, considering the way it's set up, and it's got to, would have to start in the House, although the Senate can encourage it, that's going to take some leadership. And I just can't imagine, in my mind of minds, Alex, a representative getting, we're going to have to take a break here for traffic, and then we'll pick it up when we come back. But a newly minted representative or somebody that gets reelected that's been there for a long, long time. And the first thing they say is, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut Social Security, we're going to cut Medicare, and we're going to cut Medicaid. Maybe not so much if it's a red state, Medicare, Medicaid, Medicaid rather, or Social Security. But, well, actually, yeah, Social Security, definitely, and Medicare. We'll pick it up when we come back. Alex Narasta, It's a Mess, Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. He's not a mess, but the federal spending is just out of control. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:57 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Alec Narasta, Vice President for Economic and Social Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. We're talking about Doge cuts, federal spending, and what they maybe tried to accomplish but didn't. Started at $2 trillion, went down to $1 trillion, then went to $1.5 billion. My hypothesis before, I guess, if you will, my theory before about the House of Representatives and the way the government is structured, and any serious reform would have to start in the House, although, you know, the Senate would ultimately have to approve it. But because of the 2-year terms and the fierce battle over red and blue, I don't see the leadership coming from anywhere to address this. Am I being overly pessimistic, Alex?
I don't think you're too pessimistic, but what really needs to happen is, you know, the voters just have to want it. And the voters have not been given, I think, this stark choice yet. And frankly, they're not at the point where they have to choose yet. The government is still able to borrow at a decent interest rate. They can run true trillion-dollar deficits. It has an economic effect, but it's not devastating. It's not the worst possible scenario. So until those things happen, until there's a crisis, I think we're going to see this government spending largely on autopilot.
So what happens when it hits the fan?
So a number of things that happen when it hits the fan. The federal government is estimating that Social Security will become insolvent in the early 2030s. What will happen then is that Congress will shove money into the program to keep it afloat, to make sure that benefits don't decline. But what really matters is when the government can't borrow anymore to cover its obligations. If it can't borrow anymore, if the bond market will not lend money to the federal government, then in a very short amount of time, it's going to have to cut trillions of dollars, or it's going to have to print money to cover the difference. Either way, we're going to be in a heap of trouble.
Give me a year on that.
If I knew when it was going to happen, I would make billions of dollars shorting the market.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Have a Merry Christmas.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200-plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
So the Battle of the Bulge is a battle in mostly in Belgium, but also in the Netherlands, a little bit in Luxembourg. 81 years ago, Hitler has this grand design that he can break through the Allied lines, split the Germans and the Americans, that we'll give up, and somehow he can win World War II. It's a huge gamble. He's going to assemble a tremendous force, about 250,000 troops in the lead echelon, 1,000 tanks, another 800,000 troops following those. This will be the largest battle in the U.S. Army's history, if you think of that as setting the stage.
What were the conditions? What was the lay of the land, the terrain, et cetera?
Yeah, so the Ardennes is incredibly rough. These little small roads, this is why the road junctions at places like Bastogne are so important, because they can control the area. Dense trees, sharp ravines, little streams through there, beautiful area. And then it's wintertime, so not only you have rough terrain, but winter. And then literally 81 years ago, on the 23rd of December, the temperatures dropped. The Siberian high came in, and the temperatures dropped below freezing consistently, below zero. Now the ground froze solid. So the soldiers, you know, trying to dig a foxhole in frozen ground are already horrendous conditions, you know, trying to treat wounded. Soldiers trying to stay warm. You know, many had not had, winter clothing issued yet. And, you know, they're using overcoats and other things to try to stay warm. So, and then you have an incredible German condition that you're fighting against. You know, the Germans are pretty ruthless at this point. Lots of artillery, close combat. And so, you know, those combinations of conditions are really horrific, and I think demonstrate the tenacity and resolve of the American fighting man in this case. You know, the difficult conditions and difficult enemies, they really, really come to the fore.
I want to talk about that tenacity and resolve because, you know, we get a cold front here and we run from the car to the office or whatever, and it's like, it's chilly, it's miserable. But these guys are living basically in snow. They're living in the ground in snow. I can't imagine how they even went about keeping themselves warm or how you live under those conditions, Colonel.
Yeah, I was fortunate for the 40th anniversary I spent with the Bulge with a number of veterans that were in the battle. And almost everything they remember is how incredibly cold it was, how difficult the conditions were, or, you know, the number of wounded and how, you know, how almost impossible it was to treat the wounded in that. Or, you know, their buddy might be sleeping in the foxhole next to him and they wake up in the morning, he's frozen stiff. Mm. I mean, you know, you're talking, you know, the ground is, you know, frozen 7, 8, 10 inches deep, you know, so that it's deep enough, you know, frozen enough where the tanks can move across that. Earlier in the battle, it's been muddy, but by now it's all frozen solid. And, you know, there is, you know, very little opportunity to get out of that, particularly if you're in the front line. And because the forces are stretched so thin, it's not like they're going to pull you back and get you to some, you know, nice warm tent to warm up. And you know, what they remember is just how difficult and incredibly, incredibly cold it was, almost to a man. And, you know, it's interesting, their recollections, you know, what day it is, you almost have to find, you know, one of the officers who was keeping track, because for the soldiers, the battle's over a month long. Every day just kind of blends into the next, pretty horrific conditions that they're really really master through.
Let me take a break. I want to pick it up when we come back. And I always like to drill down, Colonel, on a micro level of that because, you know, we look at it from the drone level, if you will, of the Battle of the Bulge and how many soldiers were involved. But, man, for these individual men, they were living this every day. And you said the battle went on for how long?
Into the 25th of January, so, you know, over a month and a half.
So imagine living in these conditions, and you said in some cases you would share a foxhole with a soldier, and the soldier would expire overnight due to cold. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
That's exactly right.
Incredible. 7:21, more when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Colonel Michael Bell, Executive Director of the National World War II Museum's Jenny Craig Institute for the Study of War and Democracy, about the Battle of Bastogne. That's right. I wanted to make sure I said it right. That went on in the Ardennes. It was the Battle of the Bulge is what it, I guess, maybe more commonly referred to as. General, you mentioned, Colonel, rather, you mentioned the tenacity of the American soldiers. Did they have any warm food to eat at all? Or what were they surviving on?
Yeah, there are some, we'll pull back and they'll have some rations and kind of heat those up and move those forward. But for the folks that are in the forward elements or while you're attacking, you typically would have a K ration. It kind of tastes like sawdust. You know, about 3,000 calories. It's really particularly for the folks in Bastogne, once it's surrounded, you know, it's the 101st and parts of the 9th and 10th Armored Divisions. You know, the conditions are incredibly grim. The Germans overrun part of the medical unit, so, you know, the medical conditions are terrible. After the breakthrough, when Patton's 4th Armored Division breaks through to Bastogne, then you can have resupply convoys. You can begin to kind of set up, you know, maybe a kitchen here and there where you can get some hot food. But before that, I think it's a pretty grim set of conditions for all these. And a number of these units are either, you know, they're surrounded or bypassed. They're cut off from their supplies. You're really making do with what they have in terms of food, but also in terms of ammo.
You're breaking up a little bit there, Colonel. I want to hear what you have to say. Tell me about what happened with the Germans calling on an American commander to surrender.
Yeah, so the Germans surround Bastogne. It's a big crossroads town in the south. And the assistant division commander of the 101st, General McAuliffe, is there. The Germans send a flag of truce up. They've surrounded it initially with 3 divisions and soon with 7 divisions, so they're massively outnumbered. And they call for the Americans to surrender. It's written down that he says nuts. Likely he said something else. but, you know, the stenographer captured something that's printable. But, you know, and they kept fighting. And, you know, that just the word of that gave the soldiers some resolve. And then within a few days, the 4th Armored Division, you know, battalion led by Creighton Abrams, you know, of course, they named the tank for him later, is going to break through to Bastogne and relieve the 101st. But for those guys, the fighting continues. They're going to be in the fight, you know, still for another month after that.
So many of us watch Band of Brothers. Did they get it right, Colonel?
Yeah, I think they do a great job. The only piece that I think I would add is they tend to leave out the other units that are there in Bastogne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's several units that have delayed back in this massive German attack. You know, 75 miles wide. Sometimes you think maybe it's just the Band of Brothers by themselves. And in all, you know, you've got over 600,000 American soldiers in the Battle of the Bulge. And so I think you want to, you know, honor the Band of Brothers, but also recognize that, you know, they're not unique. There's a bunch of other bands of brothers out there, you know, fighting just as hard.
And that's what I think the National World War II Museum does such a great job of, is telling, although you're talking about 600,000 soldiers, telling the individual stories, because when you get right down to it, that those are individuals, right, that comprise that 600,000. And that's their reality every day.
Well, I mean, it's hard to relate to 600,000, but we can relate to, you know, individual people, individual actions, individual heroism, resolve. And I think you're exactly right. You know, that's how we can relate to the story.
God bless them all. Thank you, Colonel. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you. God bless.
Same to you, sir. Colonel Michael Bell with the World War II Museum. 7:30, 1 minute late, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. All right, so it's 7:39 on Festivus, and as part of our little taking it to the text survey, we thought we'd ask people to text in with what is it that really just gets under your skin and annoys you, right?
Air their grievances.
Air your grievances. Somebody says, my significant other.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, watches the phone while trying to watch TV and is constantly asking me what happened.
Well, if you'd pay attention,
put
you
the
know
phone
what
down
happened.
And pay attention and stop asking me. Somebody else said open floor plans when it comes to offices. I don't really work in an office environment, so it doesn't really bother me.
Well, we
me,
actually but. Have a redesign plan here where they want to knock out all these walls and we're all going to share common areas.
Really?
Yeah.
Somebody else texted in about chewing with your mouth open. Somebody else texted in and said, people who always have to up, you won't want up you in a conversation. And then somebody else texted in, this is one of my...
I don't want up people. I chew up them.
This is one of my pet peeves where you're trying to explain something to them or trying to have a conversation with them. And they're not listening. They're just waiting for their turn to talk. You can tell, right?
What did you say?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, well, not even that. It's like, I'll tell you what the problem is the, did you hear what I just said?
No, I wasn't even listening.
Right, exactly.
Waiting for you to breathe so I could jump in.
Right, exactly. Waiting for you to breathe. Waiting for, sensing a silence. All I'm doing is I got in the background and I'm sensing silence. As soon as I hear silence, I'll start talking.
I finished my Christmas shopping yesterday.
Did you? Well, good for you. That's awesome. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Lisa Morisi, microbiologist, immunologist at Tulane University School of Medicine. Dave, do you know what this disease is that we're going to talk about is?
You know, it's really not that foggy out there.
No, it's not. Meliodoiosis. How do you say it? Meliodosis. We'll figure it out when we come back. We're running a pretty loose ship here on Christmas Eve here on
WWL. For the
record,
I was doing that.
I know you were. Back in a flash, WWL. 7:47, 13 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this Christmas Eve, joined by Lisa Morisi, Dr. Lisa Morisi, a microbiologist and an immunologist at Tulane University School of Medicine. Good morning, Doctor, and Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you.
Oh, same to you, Tommy, and thanks for having me.
Tell me about melioidosis. Is that how you say it? What is this?
You got it, Tommy. You pronounced it correctly, melioidosis.
Melioidosis
is a little-known tropical disease, and so it's caused by a bacterium that's found in the soil, and it's really present in all tropical and subtropical regions of the world, including the U.S. Gulf Coast.
Mm. How did this come to be? How did we find out that it exists, and what kind of problem can it cause for us?
Well, so this is a bacterium that basically hangs out in the soil and in water, and it really doesn't, you know, cause much problems for humans unless you come into contact with it. And so with, you know, increasing change in the weather, so wind events, hurricanes, construction activities, those events tend to disturb the soil and the water, and those types of events are why we're seeing increased cases of the disease and more human cases occurring across the world.
How do you know if you have it, and what does it do to you?
Well, that's a great question, Tommy, because this disease is actually known as the Great Mimicker, and that is because it can look like a lot of different illnesses. And so the bacteria, once it's in the body, it can infect our lungs, it can infect the bloodstream, it can really infect any part of the body. And so if it's not diagnosed quickly and properly, it can be mistaken for other diseases and not treated properly. And in those circumstances, it can have a very high fatality rate.
Really? Is there a percentage or the part of the population that's more at risk than others?
Yes, that is one of the things that's a, sort of a relief about this disease, is that it tends to really only infect people with occupational risk, so people who are in the presence of high places in the world where the bacteria is found in really high concentrations, like rice paddies in Thailand. It's also a risk to people with diabetes, and so travelers to parts of the world where you might find the bacteria are at risk, especially if they're doing activities that might have them encounter the bacteria in the soil, like adventure activities. And then other people, like with liver disease or chronic renal disease, are also somewhat at increased risk of severe cases.
So it's just in the soil, or something puts it in the soil, or something that happens with the soil makes it develop? I'm trying to understand this, Doctor.
Yeah, so we have bacteria in everywhere in the world, right? We have bacteria in our bodies. We have bacteria in the environment. So bacteria thrive in water. They thrive in the soil. And so this bacterial species just evolved in the soil and water, but it is also capable of infecting other mammals, not just humans, but also animals. And so, again, upon a chance encounter, if we have an abrasion in our skin, for example, and we encounter it in the soil or water, it may enter into our bodies and then cause disease.
Hmm. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Talking to Dr. Lisa Morisi, microbiologist and immunologist at Tulane University School of Medicine, about melioidosis. I think I got that right. Melioidosis. Did I get it right, Jordan? Well, yeah, okay. And we'll talk about how you go about either preventing it or curing it or getting yourself better if you do get this. Right now, traffic, WWL.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience. And it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.
7:56 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dr. Lisa Morisi, a microbiologist, immunologist at Tulane University School of Medicine, about melioidosis. So you said it is the great imitator. How do you know if you have it, doctor? Blood test?
Well, Yeah, so there are diagnostic tests that can be run to detect the organism known as Burkholderia. That's the bacteria that causes the disease. And so it can be diagnosed, and it can be treated with antibiotics because it is a bacterial infection. However, it's not as simple as taking a pill. It usually requires hospitalization with several weeks of intravenous antibiotics, and then they send you home with multiple weeks of oral antibiotics. Mm. And so the cost can be very expensive, and the disease can relapse and recur.
I'm looking at it. It says bacteria can cause an aggressive form of pneumonia within 72 hours that can obliterate the lung. This is serious stuff.
Yeah, this bacterium, even though it's really not widely recognized around the world, it is one very dangerous organism. And that's the reason that we're working on a vaccine to protect against it at Tulane.
So is this the kind of thing that only people of a certain risk would have to get vaccinated against, or how prevalent is this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tommy. So typically the disease was really thought to be restricted mostly to Southeast Asia and Northern Australia. And so people there are well-versed in the disease, and they really would like to see a vaccine developed to protect the populations there. But as you know, with a lot of travel, we have military troops that are stationed in parts of the world where there are very high concentrations of the bacteria in the soil there. We want to be able to protect everyone, and so we can target the vaccine to those groups that might be at highest risk, like travelers, people with diabetes, our military troops in regions of the world where you find the bacterium in the soil, and then those parts of the world that I mentioned, like Southeast Asia, Thailand, for example, and India, China, many other places of the world where they're starting to see increases in the disease.
So where does the research stand in terms of the vaccine?
Well, thanks for asking, Tommy. We have actually been working on a vaccine for more than 10 years, and we at Tulane have developed the leading candidate to protect against this disease. And so what we hope to do next is we've taken this vaccine from discovery all the way through preclinical testing to GMP manufacturing of drug substance. And so we are ready to move the vaccine into human clinical trials, and we hope to do that very soon with our collaborators, perhaps in Europe.
Well, thank you for all your efforts, Doctor. I'm going to tell you what, that's the kind of thing that goes on quietly where we don't realize what's happening. But if you get something that's going to obliterate your lung, you're going to be glad that something like that exists. Thank you, and have a nice, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and everything else.
Thanks for having me, Tommy. You as well.
Thank you. Dr. Lisa Morisi, microbiologist, immunologist at Tulane. We come back, we'll talk to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, about them Red Hot Saints. There you go. Mike Haas with the call, 816. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. How you doing, Jeff Nowak?
I'm doing good. I mean, how about those Pelicans, too? It's like the New Orleans sports teams, their Christmas gift to you is they've decided to stop losing games.
And win some games and put some wins together in a row. It would be nice to see the Saints beat the Titans. That'd be, what, four in a row?
It would be.
And then go ahead and wrap it up in the final week against the Falcons and go into the next season with a five-game winning streak. Tell me what was most impressive to you about Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because that might be the worst team in football right now in the New York Jets. Like, if you had to rank everyone on a ladder of how likely they are to win a game the rest of the way, the Jets might be 32 out of 32 teams. So, you know, the Saints went in as a 6.5-point favorite, and I think what impressed me about their performance was they were supposed to win that game, and they went and they won that game, and they did it in convincing fashion. They didn't let them hang around. I mean, it was 9-6 at halftime, but that game was over in the third quarter. And I think that's a good quality to have. Like, you got to be able to beat bad teams. You can't play down to your competition. Mm-hmm. I always look at the Panthers. I think they've lost their last 12 games that they've been favorites in. Mm. And, like, that's a good way to lose your fans. Every time they walk into the building, be like, we got this, they walk out unhappy. You know, every time they have some confidence, you slap them down. And so it's just a good picture of a team that's learning how to win games. You know, you scored your most points of the season. You allowed your fewest points of the season. You threw for 300 yards. You sacked the other quarterback eight times. You know, it's just, it all went the way you hoped it would. And that's what good teams, that's what teams that want to develop into good teams have to be able to do in matchups that they are superior in.
So have we seen the last of Alvin Kamara for the season? Is he on IR or not?
He's not on IR. It's tough to say whether he comes back or not. You have to ask whether it'd be worth it to come back with a knee issue. You know, they haven't put him on IR, which would indicate, it would seem to indicate that he's still available and they could definitely use him. You know, they went out and threw the ball a ton in that game. And it wasn't about, hey, we're behind, we're trying to come back. It was about, this is our best way to move the ball without a lot in the run game, right? Like you saw Taysom Hill have 12 carries. He was really effective. So we'll have to see. I actually like what I've seen from Audric Estime. I'd like to see some more from him over the final 2 weeks. They also signed Nyheim Hines on the practice squad. Wouldn't be surprised if you end up calling him up for one of these two final games.
Who is that, Jeff?
Nyheim Hines, he's a veteran running back. They signed him to the practice squad last week after Devin Neal went down. He's just a veteran player. He's been out. He was out of the NFL in 2023. He actually messed up his leg real bad in a jet ski accident in 2022. His friend ran into him. And so he missed the entire 2023 season. He spent some time with the Browns last year but didn't play in a game. And then he was with the Chargers briefly this year. So if he gets out there for any extended run, it would be a big moment for him. So wouldn't be surprised if he's an option down the stretch, but I don't know. When you're 5-10 and you have a running back that's coming back from a knee injury, how much are you going to push it? I'd be surprised.
Yeah, and I was thinking over the weekend, listening to y'all do the game, just with Estime and who's the other one? Hull? What's his name? The other running
Devin
back?
Devin Hull, yep.
Yeah, and now we're talking about Nyheim Miller-Hines, how, boy, you never would have thought these names would have come up at the end of training camp, would you? That these would be the running backs that the Saints are playing with. And it just goes to show you with injuries and attrition, you never know.
Yeah, and I mean, you could say that at wide receiver, too. I mean, you're talking about Mason Tipton, Kevin Austin, Dante Pettis, right? So I think that, you know, I guess what's the most, you know, what I was impressed with. One of the things I'm impressed with is they were able to win that game and do it convincingly with a supporting cast around the quarterback that is, suffice it to say, not what you planned for, right? And you're able to get it done with backups at running back, at along the offensive line, at the receiver. So that's a good thing. That's a good sign.
Now let's take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, 821 Traffic Now, WWL. 826 here at WWL. I'm Tommy Tucker, joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. A couple of questions, Jeff. Have you seen anything to indicate that Tyler Shuck is not the guy going into next season?
Honestly, no. You said not the guy, right? Am I answering this the right way?
That's, I phrased it that way on purpose because it's like, okay, I've not seen anything to indicate that he is not the guy. To me, he checks off a lot of boxes.
Yeah, and I'm glad we've gotten to that stage of the argument where you're looking at the opposite way and not, has he done anything to show he is the guy, which is what we were talking about earlier in the season.
Right.
And, I mean, if you're the Saints, I don't know how you'd go into this offseason and feel like, well, you got to replace this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you're the Saints and you continue to scout quarterbacks and bring in guys, but I don't think, you know, you're looking at the first round, you're no longer looking at a high first round pick, and that's kind of what I said earlier in the season, is if he plays well enough to ruin your draft pick, then he played well enough to prove you don't have to bring in another quarterback, right? That's probably what was going to happen, and that is what's happened. I mean, you know, and so I just think you watch him, he's getting better week in, week out. His teammates believe in him, the coaches believe in him, he's making the big throws. He's got the game-winning drives to his credit, which, you know, that's tough for young quarterbacks. You don't see a lot of quarterbacks leading game-winning drives. He did back-to-back weeks against division opponents. I just think he's kind of that steady hand that you need, right? I think he's taken a few too many sacks. That's not unusual for rookie quarterbacks. I think that's a development thing at the NFL level. Spencer Rattler took a ton of sacks his rookie season, and then he really like trimmed that number down this year. And I think you look at Spencer Rattler and you look at the jump he made from year one to year two under Kellen Moore and this coaching staff, and you kind of think, hey, well, if Tyler can do something similar and come back next year and and make a set, have a second year leap, where are you? Are you in the Drake May conversation? You know, and maybe that's a little optimistic, but I think, you know, when you have that quarterback optimism, you put on the shut colored glasses and you just ride the ride. And, you know, I'm happy that the Saints were able to go into the Superdome these final two games and send the fans home happy.
Because, the shuck colored glasses. I love it.
That's what I'm calling it.
Real quick, we only got a minute left. I want to talk to you about the second half of that highlight, and that's Chris Olave. Is he shown enough to prove that he is the number one guy and should get paid?
Number one is tough. I think he should get paid, right? I think you're going to pay him. It's just going to be a question of how much. And he shows that he can dominate when he gets the opportunity. And this was a big season to come back from the injuries and prove he had what it takes. So, no, I think he's done more than enough to earn that contract for sure.
Thank you, Jeff. Any final thoughts?
I'm just, you know, excited. Two games left. Let's see if they can. A five-game winning streak would feel significant if they could finish this season off.
And let me tell you something else I thought of. Looking at the schedule, you look at the Bears and you look at the Rams and you look, and we knew the Rams were good, but you look at the Patriots. They had some tough going there early on in the season.
Yeah, no question. Well, how you play at the end of the season matters, and so finishing strong is a good quality half for these teams.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. You have a Merry Christmas and a safe trip out to Tennessee. Thank you, sir. 8:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. Hearing the governor talking about the opportunity for Greenland to become part of the United States, I just think about the sales deal of what is it going to take for me to get you to be as a part of the United States? What's it going to take? What do you need? What do we have to do for this to happen?
Well, the president sure seems to think that it comes with great wealth opportunity mm-hmm. for Greenland and national and world security. Mm-hmm. Those seem to be strong selling points. But I don't know that the folks in Greenland are that interested in changing much.
Be interesting to see how it unfolds. I also think it's interesting that they refer to being an envoy as a side hustle.
Well, the point was that he's not giving up his day job.
Right, exactly. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk about this $30 million power plan that the city council approved, neighborhood power plan. Pretty interesting stuff. You'll find out what it's about when we return here on WWL. 8:45, quarter till 9, Christmas Eve Eve, or as it's otherwise known, Festivus. Natalie Jordy joins us now, community solar lead of Together New Orleans. Good morning, Natalie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
It is Festivus. Do you have any grievances you want to get out of the way?
Not publicly.
Okay. All right. But there are some, right?
Of course. Everybody has a few.
Absolutely. Let's talk about this project, because I think it's interesting. I saw Paul Murphy had a story on this at Channel 4, and it concerns batteries. You say it's a historic step toward protecting lives in New Orleans. Tell us what's going on, if you would, please.
Sure. So the city council has just approved a $30 million program known colloquially as the Neighborhood Power Plan. And the funds come from a settlement with Entergy. And what they're going to be used for is to help install many more batteries on buildings around New Orleans, both residential and commercial. And what that means is two things. It means that when the power goes out, like after long duration power outages, after hurricanes, or even just when we have strain on the grid, the buildings that have batteries on them can stay on and provide sometimes life-saving resources to the people in them. Right now, the organization that I work for, Together New Orleans, has built out a network of 17 or so resilience hubs on churches. But the aim of this program is to put batteries on many other different types of buildings, like nursing homes, regular homes, hardware stores, whatever might be useful to the city of New Orleans to have on when the power grid is down. Now, the second thing that's great about batteries is that when you have a large aggregation of them, thousands of them, like this program is hoping to achieve, it can actually behave like a real power plant. When the grid is stressed, the utility can suck a little bit out of each battery, and it's basically the same power equivalent as firing up a peaker plant. And what that means is that we no longer have to build as many, you know, gas-powered power plants or things like that, because we can make more use of the grid that we've already built and of the infrastructure that we've already invested in.
Do people pay for this, or does a grant fund this? How does that work, Natalie?
So the grant will provide partial funding. There's actually federal tax credits available for battery installations. In New Orleans, you can get up to 40% off of your installation from the federal government in the form of a tax credit. And we estimate that this program will provide another 40% or so of the way. There's an additional carve out for low income families. But the goal is to make it very, very affordable for batteries to go on many types of buildings where the cost had been out of reach beforehand.
Who determines who gets them, and how do you triage that in terms of importance to the community or ability to pay? Take me through that.
Sure. So what's been approved so far is just the big picture idea of the program. Over the next few months, some implementation advisors that the city council has hired is going to figure out the kind of nuts and bolts of the program, the application process, the criteria. But once that's been developed, anybody, any organization or any person can apply to the program. And if they qualify, it'll be on a first come, first serve basis for who is able to get it. So I think most likely it'll be companies that finance the insulation up front, and then they get the rebate.
Are there similar instances to this in other cities?
Yes. What's called virtual power plants, which is these aggregations of batteries, exist all over the country. I think there's 400 or so demand response to virtual power plant programs in the country. What's different about the one in New Orleans is, number one, that we're more susceptible to extreme weather and long-duration power outages. So on top of the grid benefits, we also kind of have the resilience benefits of this plan. And also, I think it's quite novel for a utility settlement to be used to help fund the installation of these batteries.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. If y'all have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. We're talking about Together New Orleans and these virtual power plants, if I got that right. And basically, Natalie, correct me if I'm wrong, but it installs batteries that are powered by solar panels. Stop me if I'm saying
that's
anything
right.
wrong. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
correct.
You're saying it right.
And it stores energy so that when the power goes out, or if there's a strain on the grid, well, then there's energy there to keep the lights on or keep the air conditioner going or whatever, correct?
That's absolutely right. And there's also benefits on blue sky days whereby these batteries strengthen the grid and keep us from having to build it out further.
And also, you know, we joke about it, about the wheel of rodents, but it is a problem with utilities around the country where a rodent can get in and cause a problem, a major problem. 850, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:57 now, talking to Natalie Jordy, community solar lead at Together New Orleans. Natalie, you have a story. You know, I like to do these every now and then. We'll talk about how everybody has a story. And when you were a kid growing up, you didn't plan on being the solar lead for Together New Orleans, did you?
No, I sure didn't. I've had lots of twists and turns in my life.
You really have. I'm looking at this, a cheesemonger in London.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
No, it was great. Ate a lot of cheese.
Yeah,
I was in my early 20s.
I can imagine so. So let's talk about this plan here. Somebody texted in and said that they work with homeless people and it would be of great benefit with the shelter that they have. Can people apply to get this? Or tell me how they go about, first of all, is this as big as it's going to get? And secondly, how do they go about maybe getting on a list to have this done?
Sure. So the program isn't live yet. The only thing that's happened is that the city council approved the funding for it out of a settlement fund from an Entergy settlement. Mm-hmm. So over the next couple of months, the program will be put together by some consultants that the city council has hired, and they're going to determine what the application process is going to be. I'm sure there'll be some publicity around when it goes live, but I imagine it'll be probably, you know, spring, summertime of next year mm-hmm. when people and organizations are going to be able to apply for these the funding for these batteries.
So the first step is you have to have solar panels, correct? Or not?
Yeah, because the thing is, if you don't have solar panels on your roof, the battery runs out pretty quick, and it's not that useful in a long-duration power outage. If the if you have solar panels and you pair them with batteries, you can kind of go on indefinitely.
Is this enough battery, somebody texted in, to power an air conditioner and things like that?
It depends how much battery you buy. It can be. Or you can get a small amount of battery and just use it to power certain things like you know, the internet or the fridge or the freezer or the lights or whatever. And obviously, an air conditioning is a large load.
I'm sorry, somebody wanted to know about the size of this, and would it be enough to, like, power a cooling station, like we talk about after a storm? It's hard to imagine on a day like today, but a cooling station where you could get a gym or something like that going? Recreational facility?
Yeah, so this is modeled on the existing community lighthouse project that my organization Together New Orleans has stood up, which has solar and batteries on many local churches around town. There's also been an effort called Get Lit, Stay Lit to power restaurants with solar and batteries. And so this effort is an attempt to expand the program beyond just those institutions and power many other different kinds of buildings.
I wanted to have you on because people may not care on Christmas Eve, but they certainly will care if the power goes out on a hot day. Thank you, Natalie. I appreciate your time. Have a happy holiday. Thank you, Dave. As you said, there is a bowl game today in the Caesars Superdome, and Billy Ferrante joins us now, New Orleans Bowl Director, to talk about it. Morning, Billy. How are you?
I'm doing good, Tommy. How are you doing?
I am all right, sir. Let's talk about the big game today.
All right. Well, Southern Miss versus Western Kentucky, 4:30 p.m. in the Superdome. It should be a really good game. These are two really well-coached teams. A lot of offense coming from Southern Miss against a really good defense from Western Kentucky. It's a matchup that we've actually kind of looked at for weeks now prior to the actual official announcement, and we're lucky to get it and looking forward to it.
I'm going to tell you what, Western Kentucky gave LSU all they wanted when they played earlier this season.
Yes, they did.
You know that. Tell me about the game itself. Who does it benefit?
Well, the bowl benefit, and this is really every college bowl game around the country, you know, it's the benefit to the community. It's the economic impact, but it's also what we do in the community for underserved youth throughout the course of the year for teachers. We recognize teachers in the community. We'll give them $1,000 for every touchdown scored. So we've got some that are pre-selected and looking forward to that. But we'll also have probably have 25 kids from the community at the game. We've got a STEM fest that starts about, I think, 2 o'clock this afternoon. So get them a little education and a little football.
How do you go about getting tickets?
Either Ticketmaster or the Superdome box office, I think, opens at noon today.
Tell me about the history of this game, because it's hard to believe that it's been 25 years.
Yeah.
Billy?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, this game was started, when we started, we were the 25th bowl game. There's now 41-2, I believe. And it was started when the Sun Belt Conference actually started playing as a conference. All of their members previously just played independent. And Wright Waters, the commissioner of the Sun Belt at the time, came to the Sports Foundation and said, "Are you guys interested in starting a bowl game that my champion can be bound to?" And we actually, at that very same time, as a Sports Foundation, were looking for an event that we could own. You know, all the events that we're involved with, Super Bowls, Final Fours, NBA All-Star, all those events that come into and out of town, we don't own. But we felt like it was important that we had one. So it was a really good fit for us. And we've really, over the 25 years, you know, I think we've done a lot to create some equity for ourselves in the community. I spent 5 years explaining to people what the bowl game was. and then Katrina hit and everybody was displaced. We had to move the game to Lafayette for that year and kind of had to start back over from scratch. But, you know, we really feel like that our game provides the best experience for the student athletes, for the administrators, the coaches, their families, because of the city we play in and the stadium that we play in. And that's really unmatched by any other bowl game, I think.
As far as stadium,
outside the Sugar Bowl.
Stadium you play in, is yoga in the dome, did that happen already or not?
Yes, it did. That was last night. We had it's really gotten to be one of the more popular events that we do. We had about 200, 250, I think,
wow,
people that came into and had a 1-hour yoga session on the floor of the dome.
Well, were you down there doing that, Billy, or not?
I was not. I'm not sure I could bend over and tie my shoes.
Didn't know if you were doing the reverse lotus or however they call those things, those kind of deals. Tell me about the economic impact of the game, if you will, please.
Yeah, we've averaged somewhere in the $20 to $25 million range every year, and a lot of that really depends on who the two teams are, and the travel that we get from those two teams. We think that we'll probably be nearer the high end of that spectrum this year because of the proximity of Southern Miss.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation, talk about that, if you will, please, about who they are and what they do.
Yeah, well, so we're the organization whose responsibility it is to go out and to bid upon events, those events that have a different home every year. Like I mentioned, the Super Bowls, the Final Fours, NBA All-Star. Those are a lot of the more high-profile events, but there's a number of events that we do and have done that aren't as high-profile but still fit our mission. And our mission is economic impact for the region. And we've been doing it since 1988. The first event that the Sports Foundation was involved in was the Olympic Trials at Tad Gormley in 1992. And, you know, we try to diversify the events that we look at. We're constantly having conversation with event owners, evaluating bids. We don't get awarded every event that we bid on, but we're active and, continue to serve that mission.
Tell me about some of the events leading up to the game. Did the players get involved in some community service activities?
They do. This past Saturday, we had what we call our day of service. And so we had every player from each of the two teams out at various locations, Pontchartrain Conservancy, where I think they planted some trees out there at Bucktown Harbor, Arc GNO, Special Olympics. And it's really, we used to send 10 kids from each school to Children's Hospital, and that was it. But a lot of the feedback that we got over the years from the kids about their experience in the game, and there's research that's done every year with every kid that plays in every bowl game, mm-hmm. was that they really like the community aspect of it and they want more. And so we said, well, if they want more, let's give them more.
Any final thoughts before we let you go?
No, just looking forward to a good game tonight. Very family-friendly pricing. Anybody that wants to come out and see good football before going off to a Christmas function, come see us.
It really is a good time to get the family out there, and if you don't like the huge, giant crowds, and that's, I don't mean that in any disrespectful way at all, but it's a good way to get the kids out and enjoy some college football.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
All right, Tommy, thank you.
You bet. It's the New Orleans Bowl. It happens today in the Caesars Superdome, 9:16. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. And we're going to talk about the benefits and psychology of giving and the holiday season and depression and how it can affect some people in a negative way. Christmas morning at 8 here on WWL. You can join us for a CBS News Radio Winter Holiday Special with Gil Gross. Everything you didn't know about some of your Christmas favorites, we'll hear from Peter Billingsley, the actor who just wanted a BB gun in A Christmas Story, about his experience making that Christmas classic. Then conductor Leonard Slatkin shares a story behind a holiday classic, Sleigh Ride, and the man who wrote it, Leroy Anderson. Also, we'll explore where some of our Christmas traditions came from and meet a remarkable Texas couple whose massive holiday light display is far more personal than it seems. And finally, I don't know if you've heard of La Befana or not, but that's the mysterious witch who appears during the day of Epiphany in Italy. It's all part of the winter holiday special from CBS News Radio. Don't miss it. CBS News Radio Winter Holiday Special with Gil Gross, Christmas morning from 8 until 11, right here on WWL. Let's talk about, for people that struggle with the holidays, Dr. Judy, if somebody's listening right now and they're having a hard time with it, what advice would you give them? Because here's the thing, and I know somebody that struggles with the holidays because they've lost a lot of people in their lives, and it's a neighbor that's older, and I don't want to violate any confidences here or anything, but they try to avoid it, and I don't know how you can avoid it because it is so pervasive and it's everywhere. So to say that you're not going to participate in Christmas, you almost have to kind of peacefully coexist with it if for whatever reason you're not a big fan, right?
Yeah, I mean, just because for so many people, it's a very special and joyous time. And I think it's totally within your right if this is just not a celebratory time for you for whatever reason, or just because I think sometimes people feel the pressure to pretend that they're happy because everyone's supposed to be happy around this time. At least that's what their belief system is, that somehow everybody's joyful. I mean, people are not. There's all kinds of stuff happening, but I understand that that's a huge expectation. But I do think that it's okay if you have your own feelings about it. At the same time, do you have to bring everyone else down? Maybe not. You know, you don't have to chastise other people for having a good time either. So I just think that this holiday is so personal for people, Tommy. There's no one size fits all. And I think it's okay wherever you are on the spectrum.
And along those lines, how do you go about dealing with somebody that is a not a Scrooge, but for whatever reason, they don't really, well, maybe Scrooge would be an appropriate phrase, but for whatever reason, they just don't. You know, they don't like it. I mean, you don't want to make it worse for them, but yet you do want to try to spread a little bit of joy and make them happy. Give me some advice there, Dr. Judy.
Yeah. I mean, I would say any kind of small moment of kindness is good, and it doesn't cost anything for the most part. I think it's even just slowing down and asking somebody how they're doing and being serious about hearing the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, so many times you're like, oh, how are you? You just expect them to be like, great, everything's great. And then you just kind of leave or you hang up or you walk away from them. I mean, when was the last time you really asked somebody how they were and you were really prepared for whatever answer came? It could be a 5-minute answer,
right?
You know? So even that could be just a small way to spread joy, is just to be kind and to let somebody know you care about them. Or just take something off their plate, like offer to bring them some food or get their dry cleaning for them. You know, it might not cost too much of your time, maybe 10, 15 minutes extra, but I think it makes a difference. I mean, for some people, you know, just taking something off their plate is a huge way of just showing them gratitude for them being in your life and bringing them a little joy that way.
I don't know if I shared this story with you or not, but years and years and years ago, I was whining about something or the other and to a friend, and they said, you know what, all I hear is me, 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 me. Why don't you do something for somebody else that'll make you feel better about yourself? And the compassionate person that this was coming from was a tax attorney, of all people. And it really did stick with me after decades of hearing that advice. And really, if you want to feel good about yourself, I don't think anything makes you feel better than doing something good for somebody else, especially if you do it anonymously. In my case, for whatever reason, I like to do it anonymously. What is it that happens in our brain that makes us feel so good when we do something for somebody else or give somebody a gift?
Well, I think one, it feels like you matter more than just what's going on in your microcosm. Like you said, when we're dealing with stuff and we're upset, it kind of feels like we're just in our own world. Nobody understands us. We're the only ones who are miserable. And when we do something nice for people, it really, I mean, there's a couple of things that happen. I mean, one, it helps you to recognize that you're not alone, right? That we're all connected, that you possibly just help to make someone else's day better. It makes you think, you know, above and beyond yourself, which actually is an antidote to, you know, just negative thoughts and even to an extent clinical depression, because so much of those are just this personalized experience where you become actually very self-centered in your thinking. I don't mean that in a selfish way. I just mean that, you know, thinking so much about your misery that it's all about that. And what your friend said to you, your tax attorney, friend, or colleague saying, it's all about you. I mean, even if that's teasing, that is kind of what happens in our brain, and it makes everything feel closed up and isolated. So just being able to connect with another human being is huge. And of course, there's the neurochemical benefits. When we do have that kind of connection, know that we're helping someone, our oxytocin goes up, our dopamine goes up. Those are the feel-good and connection chemicals that all human beings need in healthy doses to feel good. And so it's kind of like giving yourself a natural medicine against any kind of negative thoughts or negative feelings you might be having. And actually this past weekend, I actually took Luca to go to a toy drive wrapping party. So basically in our little cities, they all kind of come together on Saturday and everyone just wraps all the toys from the toy drive until we're done. And I thought that was kind of a cool thing for Luca to do at 4 years old, because one, he gets to be around all these toys, mm-hmm. but it's this idea of, oh, but the toys are not for you to take home. The toys are you to wrap and give to other people who can't afford to buy toys. And he had a great time. It was just nice to be in the community, to see everybody. Everybody was in a good mood. They were playing Christmas music. And it made me feel really good afterwards, even though it was just a couple of hours of our time.
I want to be very careful about how I phrase this. So let me think here. If somebody were to have, and this came in via text, but I'm not going to read it like it was texted in. If somebody wants to have a serious discussion about Santa Claus, for whatever reason, under whatever circumstance, is there an age-appropriate time for that to happen?
A talk about...
Well, just in generally speaking, a serious... Let's just leave it at a serious talk about Santa Claus.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
well, there's not a one size fits all on that one, I think.
Yeah.
Some kids start to figure it out super early, and then I guess that's the time to talk about it, right?
Yeah. About the serious conversation. Yeah. And again, I want to be careful about how I phrase this and what I say. So, but at some point, you do, I'll get to the nature of the text, basically, is what they're saying is that, and again, Dr. Judy, I'm being very careful here, that they know somebody whose child is 14 years old, and apparently they've not had the serious discussion yet, and they think that something needs to be done here, but it's not up to them really to do anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I think that as long as the family feels like it's bringing them joy, is it really bothering anyone that, I mean, is it really truly, is this a delusion that's spreading to other areas of life and there's other delusions and the person's not well? I mean, that's different than just more of like an innocent, well, I just kind of want to believe that whatever I believe is still happening. And even though I'm older, I kind of like being in that suspense. And I would just say too, whenever we go and see a movie or a play or a performance, I mean, it's obviously a form of suspending reality, right? You're right. Kind of imagining it, you're in a different world. And so for some people, if that's a form of fun for them, coping, and it's not hurting anyone, and it's not that they're just delusional in life in general, maybe it's all right. But I also understand this concerned texter, like, well, like, am
but
I
it's
just
not
play
their,
along? Kind of awkward.
It's not their business, ultimately, right?
It really isn't. It really isn't. Yeah. They can have a concern, but it's not really their place to, you know, kind of show them the way, if you will.
Yeah. Let me take a break because I got one here that popped up via text that I don't know what the answer for this one is, but it's from somebody who says they have a feeling their boyfriend is going to pop the question on Christmas Eve at a family party, and they're not going to say yes, so they don't want to get married. And how do you go about that? Because I think that's, you don't want to be presumptuous. This is a Dr. Judy one to answer here when we come back, because you don't want to be presumptuous and say no before you're even asked, but yet you don't want to embarrass anybody in front of a family full of people either, when, you know, it's like everybody gathers around and it's a poorly kept secret. And, well, here we go. Will you marry me? Not so much. We'll talk when we come back. 938 Traffic Now, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10, talking to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We deal with mental health every other Tuesday here at WWL because I think it's very important, and I've been candid about struggles with depression and so forth, as has Jay Glazer and others, and I think it's important that we get it out there and we talk about it. So, Dr. Judy, we talked about, before we went to the break, somebody texted in and is facing a dilemma. Is that Luca?
Yeah, do you hear him all the way in the background? He's like in the other room. That's amazing that you can actually hear him.
Well, the kid's got a good set of lungs on him. He's set to be an opera singer or an auctioneer. Who knows? Let's talk
right,
about...
Right, who knows?
So the basically the crux of this, for those just tuning in, a text came in. Apparently a lady thinks that the boyfriend's going to ask a proposed marriage in front of a family, his family, at a holiday gathering, and she's not inclined to get married at this moment and doesn't know how to deal with all of this. So do you go beforehand, Dr. Judy, and say, you know, Ken, if that's the name, I'm just making this up, and I hope to God that's not the name, but, you know, Ken, marriage, take me through this. You're the clinical neuropsychologist. I'm licensed. Tell me about this. How do you get through this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what is the motivation behind her thinking about not saying yes. Is it that she just doesn't think that they're quite ready? Is that she never wants to get married? It kind of seems important to think about that. Or it's just like he's not the one. I mean, right. I guess those are the three main options. And if it's that he's just not the one, I mean, it's awkward, but this might lead to a breakup discussion, right? Mm-hmm. Once you open that door. But if it's more like, I'm just not ready right now, or like, I'm just not a marriage person, those also feel like pretty important topics to tackle before they make a spectacle of themselves. And if you really do have a hunch and you feel like you know your beau pretty well and they're gonna propose, I would say that you kind of have to, you know, preempt the conversation with your own conversation. Mm-hmm. And even though it kind of seems like, hey, I'm on to you, that seems like the most honest and kind thing to do, right? Like, have the conversation, you know, whatever the motivation is. If it is that you want to continue the relationship, but maybe you just don't want to get married, that's something to say before they propose. If it's that you just think that you need a little bit, and that's also a good conversation to have, to any embarrassment, but to reaffirm how much you do really care about them and you look where this is going. However, if the relationship is clearly not going anywhere and you're not interested in this person long term, unfortunately, I kind of think that it's sort of the breakup conversation. Either way, it can't be happening in front of the family. That's awkward. That's horrible. And they will not, I think it's just not a kind thing to do. And if they knew that you had an inkling beforehand and you didn't at least try to talk them off of doing that in front of your family, they're probably going to be upset with you. So those are my two cents.
You have a generic conversation about, you know, oh, by the way, you know, I don't know if you heard or not, but Jeannie and Fred, he was going to propose in front of the family and she was going to say no. And boy, thank goodness that didn't happen. Maybe just couch it like that a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely start with a hypothetical, or you might be like, hey, it's been a while since we've checked in about like how this relationship is going. And I just want to let you know, I'm super happy with this relationship, however, blah, blah, blah. I mean, so you can open the door in whichever way you think makes the most sense. But I think in some ways, it's sort of like the jig is up, right? Once you start the conversation, they might know that you're onto them. But mm-hmm. I think that they're going to appreciate you not saying no in front of a whole group of people. Maybe they thought that was the most romantic and kind thing to do. Maybe your whole family's excited right now because like, oh my gosh, he's going to propose and we are in on the secret and she doesn't know. So it's just best to have that conversation up front. And if you have to open it by saying, hey, I heard that somebody else was getting, you know, going to propose and this mm-hmm. happened. Or you can just say, it's been a while since we've talked about where we are in a relationship. I think we should talk about it. You know, you can also start it that way.
Somebody texted in, say yes, keep the ring, and then break up. That's not the thing to do. Pragmatic, yes, but not the right thing to do. So let's talk about the long-term nature of the relationship then. So if he isn't the one, is there any need in pursuing that relationship, or is it fair to everybody so long as everybody understands you are the one for now? Or how would you proceed from that point? Because as you said, it does open some doors, and then maybe you don't want to go down the alleys that the doors open to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I guess that's the part of this where it's like, well, selfishly, I'd like to stay with him, but I'm not going to marry him ever. Mm-hmm. You got to have the conversation. Let them choose. You know, you have to let them choose where they want to take it, if that's how you feel. Or if you're just not ready, but you're like, one day I might be ready. I can't promise when, but I will be probably. That's also good for them to know. You know, you don't have to, you know, promise a definite future, but you kind of have to give them some idea. If they're that serious about you and they want to get married and you're just not in the same place now or ever, it is important to do that. And inconvenient but less selfish thing to do.
Real quick, somebody texted in and said that last year somebody gave them, their significant other gave them an expensive piece of jewelry, and they blurted out, I wish you'd had saved, I thank you, but I wish you would have devoted the money to something that they needed more in the house than a piece of jewelry, and it crushed the person. When Aww. Something like that happens, what's the best way to handle it?
Well, I think it is important to recognize that they were doing it to try to please you. Mm. And even if you want to express love a different way, there probably would have been a more tactful way to say that. If you guys have been together a long time, it might be good to have like the gift conversation ahead of time. Like, hey, look, this is the kind of things that would be nice to have as a gift, or I don't even want a gift this year. I want this. I think it's okay to be candid with your partner, especially if you've been together for a while. But once they do give you a gift, appreciate them for it.
Yeah.
Don't chastise them for, you know, not being frugal or saving for something else. I think that that's tough on them, you know?
Everything we're talking about comes down to communication, doesn't it?
Oh, man. That's 99.9% of problems in all relationships.
There you go.
So, yes, it does.
Well, thank you, Dr. Judy.
Happy holidays.
And the same to you. Exactly. All right. Thank you, Dr. Judy. 9:53. We'll take a break, come back, find out what Newell's got planned for us today here on. It took her a second, but she got it. Back in a flash, WWL.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience. And it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Santa's not the only one delivering joy this season. Unwrap a new home with help from your Las Vegas realtors. More than 15,000 members are ready to show you. There's no place like new home for the holidays.